Hello, good morning, Monday morning, and what a morning it is, because spring has sprung, the sun is in the air, and Ipswich Town have won again. Do not adjust your sets. That's right, it's Stuart Watson in the host chair. This is a rarity, and that's because I didn't make the pilgrimage to the Pilgrims at the weekend. I was doing boss things. I was in the Mark Heath role, shuffling papers back in my spare bedroom in Suffolk, and these two fine men that have joined me were down there in Devon, Alex Jones and Ross Halls, Roscoe, down below me. How are we, gentlemen? You well?
Very, very well indeed, and much better for a town win down at Plymouth. It's been a long time since we won there in front of a crowd. So, just about recovered, back in sunny Suffolk. And it feels very weird having the boss in the host chair, but Stu, good intro, my friend. That is top tier. I think listeners will be very impressed by that.
Thank you, Ross. That means a lot to me. Alex, how are you, my friend? How were your respective journeys?
Yeah, pretty good. This is strange, isn't it? Having Stu asking Ross how he is rather than the other way around. Really, this is the first time, at least, I've had this since I've joined. Yeah, we met up at Paddington on Friday and we're pretty much with each other the entire time through until... when was it that you had to go off and cover the women's game as well? So
obviously we had separate rooms.
He's also been really keen to stress this on all the behind the scenes stuff that we did. We were walking back to the hotel and Ross was going, right, let's go back to our separate rooms and get some sleep, which I was like, okay, thank you just for stressing that one. It's been a long weekend, enjoyable weekend, and glad that Town have come back with 3 points from it.
Let me tell you, boys, you do not know how good you have got it right now. I hope none of the shady NewsQuest figures are listening in, but you did two nights in Plymouth. This is unprecedented. Let me take you back to the early days of me covering Ipswich Town alongside Dave Gooderham. People might remember us being an original reporting duo. Dave and I very much did have to share rooms when we went away. I remember a trip up to Blackpool where we just about persuaded formerly Shady Archant figures that it was probably best to stay up because Ipswich played Blackpool away on the Saturday and then they had Carlisle away in the League Cup on the Tuesday night. It seemed a bit silly coming all the way back. So we managed to just about twist their arm to get a hotel for what would that have been, three nights. Had to share a room with Dave, not far from the Pleasure Beach at Blackpool. For you two to get separate rooms for two nights to cover a single game, don't take it for granted, my friends. That's all I'll say.
I cover two games, to be fair.
You did.
We'll
come on to the women making it a Devon double towards the end of this, but let's start with the men's game, shall we? We made our predictions going into this one. Bit of a mixed bag. I think maybe a couple of us, I think Alex and Mark opted for wins. Ross and I... Oh, sorry.
I was the man who's confident. No, it's fine.
And Mark went for wins and Alex and I plumped for draws, which I think spoke volumes of us all thinking, this is a potentially tricky game. Plymouth have, pipped Ipswich to the league title last season. I've given them some difficult games over recent years. They're pretty strong at home park, traditionally good atmosphere down there. And in the end, gentlemen, it sounds like that was a pretty professional, comfortable away day win. What are your sort of overall thoughts before we start breaking it down?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it. And I was a little bit uncomfortable going into it because you looked at Plymouth's recent form and it was not wonderful, but you always know what this team has in the locker. And I think they showed it when they went up to Middlesbrough the week before. They beat Middlesbrough not at all in a smash and grab 2-0. It was a really, really comfortable 2-0 win, even a dominant 2-0 win where they probably could have scored 3-4, maybe even 5 based on their kind of attacking output there. And carrying that confidence into this game to somewhere that Town have been before and know it is a tricky place to go. Remember the reverse fixture as well. That was really difficult. Morgan Whittaker scoring. He likes to do that against Town. And you're just thinking it does have the potential to be a banana skin in this little run. that we've spoken about, it felt like one of the trickier ones, and the whole home park fortress thing that has carried into the championship. So again, for Town to come into this, and look, other promotion contending teams have gone to home park, and one recently we've seen Leeds do it, we've seen West Brom do it, but to come in, play the way that they did, overcome quite a few obstacles in the team. There were issues there that we can touch on in terms of, I mean, Massimo Luongo, in terms of the weather, in terms of the fact that Plymouth's press made it really, really difficult to play out from the back, which is a very much live by the sword, die by the sword kind of idea that Town will bring into every single game. And they managed to have all these different obstacles that they had to overcome, and they did it. And in the end, it did, well, it was not an easy win, I would say, but they made it look routine. They made a really difficult game look, yeah, routine more than anything else. And that's the biggest compliment you can pay after a game like this. It wasn't an absolute thrashing win. It wasn't one where they were absolutely miles the better team, but they played really well. They did exactly what they needed to do, and they come away with a deserved 3 points.
Yeah, let's start with the team news then, when that came out at 2 o'clock, Ross. We knew that Broadhead and Burns were out through injury. Bless you, Alex. But Massimo Luongo, as Alex just touched on, was a bit more of a surprise. Sounds like that was a bit of a late call on him. Illness, and Lewis Travis comes into the team. So that's three key players for a tough away game, the longest travel as well. Alex has mentioned all the factors against Ipswich, long journey, having just been to Swansea recently as well. What did you make of that team? We ummed and ahed about who might get the nod on sort of that inside left role in place of Broadhead. It was Sarmiento in the end.
Yeah, obviously we knew about, you know, Broadhead and Burns, so we can sort of somewhat predict who could potentially start. And yeah, Sarmiento and Hutchison, too young. Young player starting. Sarmiento, I thought, struggled in this game. But it's always good to see him start and see what he can do. Sometimes I think he's maybe better to come off the bench. And then Lewis Travis, who had a very good game. I'm sure we'll touch more on him later. But coming in for Massimo Luongo, obviously Mass is a key player in his team. And yeah, get well soon, Massimo. Hopefully he feels a bit better. And I don't know if you remember, Stu, I don't know if it was the last time we went to Plymouth or the year before, but I think there was two other illnesses in the camp. I think Janoy and maybe George, no, not George Emerson, maybe Janoy and someone else who was ill, and they travelled all the way down to Plymouth. And then, of course, they woke up the next morning feeling horrible, and I think they travelled back home. So to go all the way there and not play, obviously subs, there's unused subs on the bench, but to be ill and probably feel a bit ill on the way down, it's like probably Massimo went, maybe boys, I don't feel too good, so maybe I don't go. But yeah, Mass is always a miss, but Travis did well.
Well, let's talk about him now then, while he's come up. Lewis Travis, he was in the match day programme ahead of the last home game and was talking about his frustrations at you know, having to bide his time with Morsi and Luongo being such a key part of the team in the centre of midfield. And he didn't lack confidence. He said, you know, if I'd have had a full pre-season with the team, I believe I could be a mainstay in this side. He's an experienced championship player. He's been captain of Blackburn. I think Ipswich fans had liked the little glimpses that they'd seen of him while Sam Morsi was out the side through suspension. How did he play, chaps?
Yeah, I was really impressed by him because it's not easy to come in for a game like this. And it's a little bit strange because watching him, I was thinking he doesn't look like an Ipswich player. And I didn't mean that in kind of a bad way, more of a complimentary way. He offers something totally different. I was saying to Ross after the game, and I was doing my player ratings, can I use the term shithouse and put it in the ratings? Will that be able to go in the paper? I opted against it, but he really is. And he adds, of course, something in terms of his aggression and his physicality on the pitch, but he knows how to rub people the wrong way. And I think that in a game like this, where it's going to be hostile, there's going to be quite a lot going on, it kind of worked quite well, differently in a way to Massimo Luongo and to Sam Morsi, and you could see it. I think he did kind of really anger some of the players. I think he came in at one point quite early on with a strong tackle, managed to avoid a booking, and that just immediately, in terms of kind of bull to red flag kind of thing, straight at it, got charged down soon after. And maybe in a way it kind of played against Town in that it was quite a scrappy stop-start half, but it stopped Plymouth from gaining any kind of early momentum. And that's always the danger when you go on the road, when you go to somewhere that is hostile, where the atmosphere is right up for it. I felt that from the start. It was my first kind of trip down to home park, and you can really feel the atmosphere. But he does, yeah, very much offer something else. And in terms of what he brings on the ball as well, I do think that he can offer quite a strong like-for-like replacement for someone like Massimo Luongo and also for Sam Morsi, as we've seen. So that's exactly what Town needed in January. They went out and got someone not only that can have those qualities, but has the experience to do it and has done it in this level for numerous seasons now. And he has been showing it. Yeah, there have been a few shaky moments, but it's important to remember he hasn't played too much. And this was absolutely one of his better games where he really needed to be a strong, aggressive, composed figure in the middle of the park, albeit that maybe he was lucky to hold out, I think, until the 78th minute to get a booking. Probably could have got one in the first kind of 20, 25.
I think he's one away now, isn't he? From
one away,
suspension, yeah, two-game ban.
He has 2 games to avoid the next yellow, Bristol City on Tuesday, so tomorrow, and then the Cardiff game as well. So he'll need to navigate that little period to avoid it.
Yeah, we'll see if he plays. And I assume it changed the dynamic of central midfield, did it? Did Sam Morsi then get a bit more free rein to get forward? I assume Travis was the kind of played more of the traditional Morsi role, sitting in front of the defence. How did Travis look sort of receiving the ball from Paki on the edge of the box? I think I'm not sure that's necessarily his forte from the bits and pieces I've seen of him. And Sam having the shackles off him, I noted in a lot of the highlights that I've seen, he's kind of involved in the top end of the pitch, driving forward and having his part in the goals, which we'll come on to. How did that work as a two?
I'll go on to B first, I think, because that was the one that stood out in terms of Morsi getting forward. Offers something a little bit different, doesn't it? And when you're thinking that teams are going to have a lot of analysis on Town, strong ideas of how they want to play, they would have seen this team play multiple times. And obviously, Ipswich and Plymouth are fairly familiar with each other. It means that when you make that kind of switch, teams won't expect it as much. And I think maybe it was a little bit difficult at times in terms of the conditions to kind of get him on the ball, get him going forward, because again, for someone that is such a physical kind of anchor style player, you maybe sometimes forget how slick and smooth he looks on the ball. Pardon me. But that was something that Town did manage to play into. And in terms of playing up in the back, I mean, wasn't the game for it. And this is a difficult one to kind of assess Travis in terms of his role and in picking the ball up. And it could be the same for the back line, where and you have to look at the press and you have to look at the weather, which was the two things that I kind of mentioned at the very start of the pod in terms of you're trying to play out to players like Luke Wolfenden and as well, or out to Harry Clark, trying to set the ball out wide so you can move it down the flanks. In this kind of rain, it's really, really hard to do. And also when you've got that front three of Plymouth, that's really, really aggressive. They press really well. They also know a lot of the patterns that Town want to play with as well. We've seen teams have managed to find that kind of code in the last few weeks. That makes it quite hard. So as well, for someone like Lewis Travis, who maybe isn't as familiar as someone like Sam Morsi, was a little bit difficult. And there were, I'd say, 2, maybe 3 occasions where Plymouth really did come close to punishing Town for that. Live by the sword, die by the sword. At the end of the day, they didn't end up being punished for that. And Lewis Travis comes out holding his head high for doing a really good job in difficult circumstances.
Let's talk about that first half in general then, Ross. I watched your behind-the-scenes video yesterday. You both looked very wet as you made your way to your respective positions in press box and pitch side. I think the heavens opened, didn't they, during the warm-up. What were those conditions like for those that weren't there? How did the pitch bear up? How did it affect the game?
Yeah, I'm going to take you back to Friday night, first of all. Me and AJ arrived in Plymouth and it absolutely pissed it down. So that was a great insight of thinking, oh, God, it's going to be a wet weekend. I actually got told on the Meet the Oppo video saying it's pretty much been raining in Plymouth since September last year. So I said, oh, the forecast looks like it's going to be sunny. He went, it's a lie, mate. It's a lie. It's going to rain. And that continued over onto the Saturday. And it weren't too bad, actually, when we arrived to the ground. It was sort of spitting. But then it got even worse. And, I think Cameron Burgess actually mentioned in his bit, said like the warm-up was probably the worst bit of the game, really, because it just, that's when it really, really chucked it down. And the pitch, I think it wasn't as bad as Swansea. I think we all knew, you know, Swansea was really bad, but it wasn't great. As me, as a photographer pitch side, I was just thinking, the sun is out somewhat. The sun was like coming through this clouds, but then it was completely run, you know, rain. I think there was a rainbow at one stage. But yeah, that first half was a big thing about with the rain, because, you know, it wasn't as slick passing and people were falling over and stuff like that. It just, yeah, it can affect anything. Obviously, you want the pitch to be somewhat, it's better, as I said, it was better than the Plymouth, better than Swansea, sorry. But it did affect that first half, and it wasn't a great first half to watch, in my opinion. You know, there's only a few chances in there. Of course, Wolfenden had to off the line at one moment. But yeah, when it rains, it of course does affect the game.
Yeah, that was probably the big moment of the first half, wasn't it? That goal line clearance from Luke Wolfenden. I'm not sure if that was definitely going in, looking back at the replay, but he had to be there and make sure. I know by your player ratings, you had Wolfie as the pick of the bunch, Alex.
Yeah, I think so. And it was a hard one to do, because I feel like, again, the hardest ones are the ones where you have really good team performances. And I was going through it, I was thinking, 8, 8, 8, 8. And I knew I had to have someone who stood out. And I said at the time, I thought Luke Wolfenden was one. But the best way to describe it is the fact that I heard so many different shouts, almost the entire team had like different people saying, oh, I thought he was the man of the match, he was the man of the match. Twanzebe was one, Sam Morsey was one that I know was mentioned in the replies, and we had Kiefer Moore was mentioned, players like that. And it's hard to argue. He was the one that stood out to me, just because I think he deserved a lot of credit, A, for what he had to do in terms of playing out from the back. The block was huge, at least from having seen it in that moment, it looked like it was a goal-saving block. Positioning is a big thing that I always talk about with Luke Wolfenden, and it was excellent. He's been in really good form recently as well. I also feel that maybe these kind of conditions suit someone who's a bit more up at him, physical and aggressive, like Cameron Burgess. I don't necessarily know if it's Luke Wolfenden's thing. So just he ticked a lot of boxes for me, and that's what made him stand out. Really, if you look at kind of the men of the match, I'd say it would be the back line in terms of keeping that clean sheet, as I know we'll get on to. But he was the one that stood out in terms of playing out from the back as well, and helping to navigate a really tricky first half. That, I mean, we talk about banana skins. That 45-minute period was the one where it could have been the big banana skin, and we got into kind of the last, say, 10 minutes where Plymouth were turning the screw, and I was thinking, gets half time, they're going to have a sit down. They'll get all the screens up, all those different things. I have different views of it, and that will be a huge, huge help in terms of going at it again after the break.
Mm. Connor Chaplin was past fit to play in this one. He got quite a nasty cut just below his knee in the Birmingham game. Late on, was a bit of a doubt, having missed a bit of training, but did start. And there was a moment, I think, midway through the first half that where he went down for a bit of treatment. What do we reckon, Ross? Was this another little tactical one from Kieran and the staff, like the Amari Hutchinson incident? Can't remember which game that was a few weeks ago. Was it Millwall? Millwall away? Yeah. What do we reckon? Was this another little bit of clever work?
Yes, very much so. I don't know. I was looking at Conor Chapman and went, oh, he looks fine. And obviously, straight away, all the players went over to Kieran McKenna and the coach and staff. So, they must just have moments, don't they? Obviously, they when the game's not going the way, they wanted to maybe, you know, Plymouth or whatever team we're playing are setting up a bit differently. They go, okay, we need like at least 25 minutes, someone go down. And obviously, Conor Chaplin's probably the perfect person to go down because of that injury, you know, going into this game. So, yeah, pretty much. And it's smart because sometimes if you're they're attacking you, you think, oh, they're about to score. Someone go down. And then, yeah, so very smart. And yeah. It's just you got to do what you got to do.
Mm. Well, when Ipswich gets a half-time level, even when it's been a bit of a scrappy game, even when they've not been at their best, I think everyone has that sense of optimism because of the way Ipswich finish games. Okay, diminished options on the bench. I guess that was maybe the doubt in the mind. You know, certainly when I saw the half-time scoreline, normally you think their fitness, sticking to their principles, their ability to play to the final whistle, we'll see them come through. But with no Burns, with no Broadhead. The bench wasn't flooded with options in an attacking sense as usual. But were you feeling sort of quite confident that they'd solve the puzzle and kick on?
Yeah, I think so. That was one of the bits that I put to Kieran McKenna after the game, is not only do you lose two key starters, it's then you have to bring your bench players in, and then you lose two really good impact subs from that point. And, you know, obviously you've got players like Ali Alhamadi and Marcus Harness, excellent off the bench. Harness, we've seen that before. Ali Alhamadi's had a real consistent run of cameos where he's looked lively and exciting. But, I mean, Amari Hutchinson's the one that stands out in terms of his performances off the bench, and Sarmiento probably looks better in that role in my eyes too. And I think it was just about navigating the last few minutes in terms of the first half, because there were chances there. When you look back at it, it was real chalk and cheese between the two halves, because almost all of Argyle's chances, aside from one that really stuck in my mind later on in the game, they all came in the first half. It was just a bit where the teams were trading blows in the first bit of the first half. And then I think as Town had that moment where Chaplin went down, they had a good opportunity. Jeremy Sarmiento cuts open the pitch, sets one up for Amari Hutchinson, who I think has a shot deflected wide. And you could see that I think they started to figure out where the space was. And Argyle's reply to that was play with more intensity, have fierce shots from range. Came close on a few occasions, as did Town at times. The best chance I can think of in that first half was one I didn't see coming at all. Hutchinson, quite deep into the pitch, fires across onto the head of Kiefer Moore, who's a way out, and gets a very low header that really, like really tested.
Backward flip header, wasn't it? Very inventive.
Yeah. It was quite a way out, and I think that Hazard was kind of expecting it to be a little bit higher, given that he was quite a way out. And then for it to trickle low, it really caught him out. So it's about navigating that bit. But obviously, when you get to half-time, you think, right, and we've spoken to players about it before in terms of the analysis that they do, in terms of figuring out the puzzles, the work. They've only got a couple of minutes, but Kieran McKenna is someone that knows how to sort these things out. And it didn't really take long for it to happen. I thought that actually Argyle probably looked a little bit better in the first kind of five, maybe up to 10 minutes of the second half. And they tried to keep that run going. Did fatigue play a part? I don't know. But especially once they got in and around the hour mark, it was all Town's game. There was really a turning point at that. And Argyle just couldn't get back into it.
I know Kieran McKenna felt that an Ipswich goal was coming leading up to it, which brings us on to the opening goal. It's gone down as an own goal. I don't think Connor Chaplin's going to be able to wrestle this one back. 63 minutes on the clock, and something a little bit poetic about Ipswich scoring with a sizable deflection against Plymouth Argyle, wasn't there, Ross?
Yeah, obviously that happened though in the reverse fixture at home. Of course, Barley Mumba scored that own goal. But yeah, this actually deceived me completely as well. When I was shooting, I was like, oh, where's it gone? Oh, it's gone in net. Oh, happy days. But yeah, when it comes against a team who we battled to the very end in League One, it was, definitely when it's a Connor Chaplin strike. And of course, Sam Morsey was part of this as well, as we spoke about earlier, him going a bit forward. He was very much involved in this goal. And yeah, I think that sort of surprised everyone, really, that massive deflection. And yeah, Connor Chaplin won't be adding that to his tally, unfortunately, because it was a very big deflection. It wasn't going anywhere, was it? Even though I think a lot of people on Twitter and even players themselves went, oh, that's going to the far corner, wasn't it? But good time to score, the cliche and all that.
Yeah, I think Kieran's joked that Connor will be looking to delete all angles of the goal afterwards to see if he can get away with it. From behind, looks like it might be on target, but when you see it from behind the goal, maybe not so much, but big deflection off Brandon Galloway, completely wrong foots Connor Hazard in the goal. That came in front of the Ipswich end, didn't it? That one, yeah. So a nice moment for the travelling Blue Army, who, you know, once again, in their thousands, hundreds of miles from Suffolk. I know there's a strong following down there in the southwest, but many of them will have set off at the crack of dawn from Suffolk. So nice moment for them. Let's talk about Ian Foster's comments, the Plymouth manager, on that goal. He called it a freak goal, which I've seen some people sort of not happy with, and obviously quick to point out that Plymouth have scored deflected goals against Ipswich in the past, most notably that Mumba late equaliser at Portman Road last season. That obviously predates Ian Foster, and I don't think we can argue that the fact that it is a freak goal. And you hope these things sort of even themselves out over the course of the season. Ipswich have had things go against them. This one has gone for them. And I think what the bigger point that Foster was trying to make is that he didn't feel that his players' response to that was very good. Felt that they felt a bit sorry for themselves. And didn't show a great deal of resilience after, you know, being in the game for an hour, going behind to a big deflection. Did that feel like it kind of knocked the wind out of the Plymouth sails, that goal?
Yeah, I'd say so. There's all this thing about fortunate moments, isn't it? I think I just had a look on Twitter this morning and there was a Southampton account that had listed all the fortunate things that Ipswich have had go their way. Mm-hmm. Things like opposition own goals, they've not had any red cards, their XG is much lower than the goals have actually scored, they've had 8 deflected goals, all these different things. But these things do balance out over time as well. And I mean, the one that stands out to me, what was it, 4 opposition own goals? God, what was my hot take? They'll score the most own goals in the history of the Football League or something. So these things do balance out. And in terms of Plymouth's response, yeah, I think that will be the big frustration. You compare it to Town, for example, and we talk about them going behind and the resilience that they show. No matter when it is, if it's going down in the first 15 or after the break, whatever, there's always a belief that they can get back into it. That is ultimately the difference between a team that will, with no disrespect intended to Plymouth, be a mid-table team, probably that's going to get seemingly dragged into a bit of a relegation battle, and one that's going to be challenging for the top two, just because you need to be able to overcome those setbacks. And the way that Plymouth approached it, yeah, I think they let their heads drop. And if you do that against a top team, as Town now are, then you're going to pay the price. And it was kind of two, I don't think you could say quick fire goals, but it was a fairly short period of time between the two, and they really just switched off. All the intensity kind of dripped out. The fans got quite frustrated. There was a lot of back and forth between the two sets of supporters. And as soon as you go 1-0 down, 2-0 down, the fans just feel a bit like, oh, well, we've seen it before, and it's hard to come back from that. And that will be something that they'll need to sort out. And I can definitely imagine it will be a big frustration for Ian Foster.
Well, if we're talking about the subject of luck and evening itself out, we've had plenty of conversations about the number of penalties that Ipswich haven't been given, pretty stonewallers over the course of the season. And yeah, the old cliche that you hope it kind of evens itself out. And I think generally it does, to be fair. Alex just mentioned it there. What was the sort of the vibe like between the two sets of supporters? Yeah, I think Plymouth fans felt a little bit that they maybe didn't get the love that they deserved after getting 100 and whatever points it was last year to pip Ipswich to the league title. I saw in Alex's updates that there was some chance of Championes quite early on. What was, was that a thing?
That was a thing, very much so. I think there is a love-hate relationship between Plymouth and Ipswich fans. I think some fans will go, fair play to Plymouth. No, they weren't expected to be up there, and for them to win the league, fair play. And like Town were like, you know, stuff your league title up your arse. I can say arse, can't I? And yeah, I have basically. So sorry if I've, you know, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't matter. People don't mind it. But yeah, it was a little bit banter, you know, going across, which is good. But obviously that away end was very much happier when that first goal went in, because it was right in front. Of course, Connor Chaplin, passionate as he is, knee slide right in front of the away fans. But yeah, a little bit of banter coming across, and you got to love that. And you know, when it's away home fans, a little bit of a rivalry there, which, can you call it a rivalry? Because it's so far away. I think just because of the last season's battles, but obviously we're in a very different position to Plymouth. Of course, a different manager and stuff now as well. But now it's always good to see that.
My feeling is it's quite good-natured rivalry, yeah, in inverted commas. I think there's an underlying respect probably from both sets of clubs. Ipswich, I think the general consensus was fair play to Plymouth, you know, to get that points total and beat us to the title, then, you know, you just have to applaud that. And for Ipswich, it was job done. You know, League One, time in League One was done. And I think this year, Plymouth, probably quite pleased to see Ipswich up there and doing well to sort of show that you can continue that momentum. So, and I guess Ipswich fans now are getting a bit of a taste of what it was like for Plymouth last season, really, that they were felt like, you know, every single pundit and manager and whoever that was commenting on the League One title race, oh, Plymouth will fade away. Oh, Plymouth, when they got done in the Papa John's final, didn't they, by Bolton, they'll fade away. There's no way that their goalkeeper can keep being man of the match every week. And yet they kept on winning and they stayed the distance. And really, it's a similar vibe with Ipswich this year, isn't it? Everyone's banging on about Leicester, Leeds, Southampton, Ipswich barely getting a mention, and yet here we are. But we'll come onto the table and the ramifications of a near-perfect weekend in a minute. You've mentioned it, the second goal came 11 minutes later. I was driving home from picking my daughter up from a Tempin bowling party. I turned on the radio. I was listening to the dulcet tones of Brenna Woolley. I gave it a little fist pump when I heard that one go in. Kiefer Moore, another goal, 5 in 7 now for him. Talk me through it.
A very Kiefer Moore goal and a not very Ipswich Town goal in terms of a very long looping cross into the box and a couple of big headers to set up Kiefer Moore. First one's Cameron Burgess, second one Connor Chaplin. Don't want to ignore Burgess's because he got a lot on it, but it's the Chaplin one, the direction he gets on it, exactly the right power to set it up for Kiefer Moore. And I know they've played with each other before, but there's such a strong connection there. And I think I mentioned it in my takeaways that there's a strong connection with him and the whole squad. He's scored 5 goals. 4 of them have had assists to them, and all 4 have been from different players so far. Just finds him in the perfect space, and it's a powerful finish. I didn't really see it as much in the moment. Obviously, you can see the goal, but when you watch it back, you see how much he gets behind the shot. I'd heard somewhere else in the press boxes, oh, he scuffed the shot and it's gone in. And you look back at it, absolutely not. Gets everything behind it, really rifles it in to do it near post as well. You might think someone like him, or the instinct I'd imagine would be to go across the face of goal, but he sees the gap, smashes it in. Really, really fantastic finish. And it was something that, when asked about the goal, Kieran McKenna's very quick to jump on. We all talk about Kiefer Moore's headers, but left foot, right foot, he's really, really good. And people maybe don't see that as much with the role that he has to do, but he's an excellent finisher with both feet. So that deserves a lot of credit and a lot of recognition. Shows him as a real all-round striker, something that, as we've touched on before, probably we didn't get to see in his previous stint at Portman Road. One of the biggest impact signings that I think you'll see in the Championship and the January transfer window. I had Amari Hutchinson as my player of the month for last month, but I was subscribed to a newsletter that was sent through for the entire Championship, and he was picked as the player of the month for February by one of the podcasts, and not the top 20 podcasts, who went with him. So it shows exactly what he's been doing, what he's capable of. Really, really big impact. A lovely, lovely goal to cap it off. And yeah, you had your fist bump and I have mine in the press box as well.
Bang, emphatic that was, wasn't it? What a finish. Insert good feet for a big man cliche here. Watching bits of the game back, he looked like his hold up play was really good again. He just gives that physical presence for Ipswich. And who had Connor Chaplin headed knockdown for Kiefer Moore finish with the feet that way round? Not necessarily, but let's not overlook this Connor Chaplin assist, Ross. That was chef's kiss. I mean, the awareness, you see him have a little glance over his shoulder and it's just a deft little sort of backwards flick of the head, isn't it? He knows exactly where Kiefer Moore is.
Yeah, as AJ said, they have played with each other before, so maybe that connection has just come back here. And he's just an intelligent player, isn't he, Connor Chaplin? I think Kieran McKenna even mentioned that in his presser, like he just knows where the space is. And for him just to even like attempt a header, like, because as we know, Connor Chaplin, bless him, I'm not that tall either. I'm probably the same height as him. But for him to even just attempt to try to hit that, fair play to Connor Chaplin. And sort of perfect game for him. You know, I know he won't get the goal, but sort of goal slash assist. But he gets two assists, you know, maybe. But no, very intelligent play there from Connor Chaplin. And I'm sure he'd be very pleased with that assist. And as you said, you know, normally it's the other way around. You think Kiefer Moore would be heading it down to Connor Chaplin for him to absolute smash it into the back of the net. But yeah, very good assist indeed.
Mm. Well, there was still, you know, 15 plus minutes with stoppage time. A Plymouth goal would have completely changed the dynamic. But it sounds like Ipswich saw it out pretty comfortably from there. And it's probably a chance for me to bring in one of the clips that, Ross, you've got keyed up for us. And that is Kieran McKenna talking about how well his team managed the game.
We're managing those phases of the game really well. And I think that's enjoyable, as you said, pleasing. And, you know, you see the growth in the group, really. This was probably an issue for us, maybe not this time last year, but a little bit earlier. For it was an issue for us at Plymouth last year when we came away from it. We won the lap and, you know, we gave a goal away and the stadium went mad and we weren't able to regain control of the game and manage the game well. And that was, you know, a fairly common, or it was an issue for us at times last season, especially in the early parts of the season. But a lot of the boys now have been through those experiences. You have to go through those experiences sometime to learn how to manage situations better. And we're certainly doing that better this season in general. We've done that better today. And yeah, we certainly won't rest on it. But I think you can see the experience and the growing maturity in the group, both in the senior players and the younger players.
How impressive was that end to the game from an Ipswich Town perspective? I think there was a shot that sort of hit the post from Plymouth, wasn't there? But were fairly limited in terms of their chances, weren't they?
Yeah, Miller's response essentially was to hit the post. I think it was after the second goal, hits the near post with quite a powerful shot. Initial thought at that moment is they're going to try and turn it on, and they didn't. And there's two sides to look at it. I do think that our goals overall response to going one goal down and especially going two goals down was pretty poor. And it was they overall across the 90 minutes looked quite a bit worse than they did when they came to Portman Road, which was a little bit of a surprise, but there's a lot going on there in terms of managerial changes and all sorts. And in terms of what Town were able to do, yeah, I thought they were excellent. And we've seen this quite a bit now in terms of running down the clock. And the substitutes played a big part. Marcus Harness got a really big mention when I was talking about the substitutes with him, with Kieran McKenna after the game, was one of the players who was brought up. And I think that, as you've noticed, Kieran McKenna likes to maybe find players who haven't done like too much in terms of tangible shots and dribbles and bringing the ball forward and all the exciting stuff, but come on and work hard. We've seen that with Don Ball, was one of the ones that was mentioned, I think, earlier this season that maybe caught you off guard. Marcus Harness did as well. And then you think back to it and you actually think, yeah, just the way that he slotted into the team and in terms of his game management, we've seen that quite a bit before. Really, really important. The substitutes played a part. The players who were on the pitch, and I think some of them maybe had to play a little bit longer than they would have liked given the fact that the bench was a little bit weaker than usual, but they were just able to see out the game really, really well, and that was impressive. We have seen that in the last few weeks. It's obviously different to before, and as well, doing it at home park, you just think, if they hit the post, the atmosphere ramps up a little bit. They can really start to put some pressure on. They'll know that if one goes in, everything can fall apart really, really quickly. The atmosphere is hostile. It is, in terms of the way the stadium's set up and the fan base there, they're very passionate fans. And Town have obviously struggled there in the past, but they navigated that problem so, so well, I thought, and just came out in the last kind of 10, 15 minutes pretty much unscathed, which was perfect for me in that moment as well, doing the report, having that all kind of done, having the live blog there, made it feel pretty comfortable.
Yeah, Plymouth are one of the top goal scorers at home in the division. In Morgan Whittaker, they've got probably one of the best players in the division. Ryan Hardy's having a really good season up top as well. I think Kieran McKenna's a big fan of him. He's had a few name checks from the Town boss in the past, so for Ipswich to keep a clean sheet in this game is quite something. I'll come on to you, Ross, on that in a moment, but let's first hear from one of the men that played a big role in keeping that, and that's Cameron Burgess.
Yeah, it was a hard-fought win, to be fair. Weather made it difficult at times. But yeah, I mean, one for the details, and yeah, good 3 points. Proud of that one. We're not playing against an easy team. We're playing against a good Plymouth team that have plenty of goals in them. So it was about us sticking to the details at the back and doing what we need to do from a defensive point of view. But going on to the second half and stamping our authority in the attacking half. Yeah, we've had some good ding-dongs, to be fair, the last few years. Obviously, nice to see them do well and get out of last year, same as us, you know, two good teams that probably deserved it in the end, which is good to see. But obviously, it's a new season, and yeah, we take each game as it comes. And yeah, I suppose it's a nice one to tick off to come down here and get a good result. Yeah, obviously, the fans travelling the numbers, and it's a long old way, so well done to them for coming down, and good to get a win and a couple of goals for them to celebrate.
Yeah, a day for the details. Details was very much the buzzword in that Cameron Burgess interview. It sounds like they had done their prep, as always, under Kieran McKenna. They knew the strengths of Plymouth, most notably sort of in transition on the counter-attack. What was this clean sheet built on, Ross? Was it? It doesn't sound like there was lots of body on the lines defending or anything like that. What'd you put this clean sheet down to?
Just stopping Plymouth's threats, as you mentioned. You name checked Hardy, Whittaker. I think AJ, at full time, you mentioned to me, I think Hardy maybe had 14 touches or something like that, which is not great for a striker. And obviously, Luke Wolford had him in his pocket. I'm sure that's that always that meme where you go up car keys, wallet, Ryan Hardy. So yeah, just stopping their threats. And you know, Morgan Whittaker has been the man who has been able to score against us every time. Obviously, Town were close to maybe signing him once upon a time when last year when we were battling Plymouth. But yeah, just stopping their threats and just were just solid as a rock. I think Vaz didn't really have many saves to make. I think there was one moment in the first half, though, where he had to come out and was like, oh God, what's happening here? But thankfully, nothing came out about that. But just solid. And I'm sure the boys would be happy with a clean sheet away from home as well.
Yeah, I think it's 11 clean sheets for the season and 8 of them have come on the road. We've seen all these goal fests at Portman Road, but Ipswich have shown on their travels they can produce these. They're not as good as we like the swashbuckling, will score more than you displays at Portman Road. They have been able to kind of produce these professional performances on the road and limit the opposition. And that's 10 away wins in the Championship as a newly promoted side, which is quite something. Here's Kieran McKenna talking about the victory as a whole.
Solid performance, I thought, all phases. I thought our organisation was good, discipline was good, we were really competitive, came out on top of more than our fair share of challenges, and gave ourselves a really good foothold in the game. In the first half, we knew it was going to be difficult, we knew we were going to have to stand up to, you know, a really strong home atmosphere, and we had to stand up in difficult conditions, weather and pitch-wise. But we'd done that really well, and that gave us a really good platform at half-time to know that we could, you know, we would and we could really push on in the second half if we kept doing the right things, kept limiting their threats, and we knew the chances would come our way. And, we managed to take a couple and delivered a really good second-half performance.
Well, on February 10th, gentlemen, we were discussing how Ipswich had won one league win in 9 matches following that 2-2 draw against West Brom at Portman Road. Since then, 5 wins on the spin. Millwall, Swansea, Rotherham, Birmingham and now Plymouth. As Alex highlighted in the build-up to this game, that's not been done or hadn't been done since October 2003 under Big Joe Royal's management, a Shefki Kuchi late winner in a 4-3 win at Crystal Palace. Got the 5th win in a row there. That's where that run stopped. Does anyone want to hazard a guess? I think, having had a little look through this morning, when the last time they won 6 league games in a row is, that's at second tier or higher.
Ooh. Can you give us a little clue? Is it in at least the last 20 years or no?
Well, it won't be the last 20 years because 20 years ago was when they did 5. Is it 2000s or 1990s?
You're going further back. I wasn't born.
Wow. Oh, the 80s then.
We're going back to the 80s. We're going back to the Sir Bobby Robson days. We're going back to the famous 80-81 season. And I believe it's 6 league wins in a row. In and around that famous UEFA Cup quarter-final victories against St Etienne. Stoke, Palace, Borough, Wolves, Coventry and Spurs were the six league wins as Ipswich threatened to go on and win that league title that just evaded them that season. Manchester United ultimately ended that run. But yeah, that's how far we're going back. We're going back to the Halcyon days, the golden era for the last time Ipswich won six league games in a row at second tier level or higher. Five wins in a row is, you really cannot underestimate at any level of football how difficult that is to do, can you?
And a newly promoted team coming up to the Championship as well. So, yeah, we had that in League One, obviously. We had that amazing run. And obviously, it's still impressive in League One. You know, we had to play against some really tough teams in there, some of their playing styles. But for Town to do that from where they were, as you mentioned, you know, one win in nine games before going into this. So for them to go on to that amazing run. And obviously, there's been some tough games in there. You know, Swansea, Millwall, even Rotherham. To think we had to, you know, do that wild game and then to go all the way down to Plymouth where we, I don't want to say bogey team because we had beaten them, but just to go all the way down there and to, you know, get that fifth win in a row, very good indeed from Town. And yeah, can I make it six? We shall see.
Yeah, fair bit of travel, difficult conditions in some of these games, bit of adversity, most notably the Rotherham match that you mentioned in there. Very impressive indeed. Here's the manager talking about that achievement.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I have to say, I say it all the time, but every win in the Championship is so tough. It's a lot of preparation, hard work, and so many good qualities in your group. So to win in the Championship is tough. To win away from home in the Championship is really tough. So to win five times in a row as a newly promoted team and all those things, to, you know, have some tough away games in that spell as well. I think Millwall and then Swansea and today are probably similar in terms of wet days on really heavy pitches. Them games are tough to win. So to show that level of consistency is pleasing. And, you know, we're going to try our hardest to keep it up.
That's what she said. No, you're better than that. Come on, we're better than that. Ipswich Town, back up to second in the table, gentlemen. Results elsewhere. Leeds, lunchtime kickoff. Huddersfield go down to 10 men. They can't quite get the extra goal. It finishes 1-1. Big opportunity there. I'm sure the Ipswich players didn't mention that in the dressing room beforehand. That's what they're going to tell us anyway. Whether somebody mentioned that or not, I don't know. Then Leicester go and lose at home to QPR. Three straight defeats for the Foxes. They looked miles gone just a few weeks ago. I think there was an 18-point gap to Ipswich at one stage. Now just three. Southampton, unfortunately, did manage to get a very late goal to win 4-3 away to Birmingham. But they're shipping goals and Russell Martin doesn't sound too happy with that at the moment. Couldn't have gone much better as a weekend, really, could it?
I had it down as a near perfect weekend, pretty much, didn't I? So, yeah, not too much that you'd be able to change. And I think if you had a look at those three teams as well, if you say two of them will drop points and one of them will win, who would be the one that you'd want to win? You probably would have said Southampton. And it just creates such a close race now, doesn't it? Have you got the table there? What's the gap between Southampton and Leicester at the moment? That will kind of tell you what the gap is in and around there. But it is tight. It's it is a proper battle. Ross has got seven between Southampton and
eight points.
Oh, sorry, you had a three up there. Sorry, I'm having a.
I'll read it out for the benefit of those listening. Leicester City 35 played 78 points. Ipswich 35 played 75 points and Leeds, everyone's on 35. Leeds are on 73, 2 points behind Ipswich, and then Southampton in fourth on 70. So still that 5-point margin above Southampton. 3 points off the top, dare we say. Yeah. Are Ipswich in a title race?
You're telling me there's a chance?
I think that pretty much any of them have a chance at this point. And I've been quite strong on that, and I will die on this hill, that while I think that Leicester are a good team, I think there's every single chance they can win automatic promotion. I think there's every single chance they'll win the league title. I don't think that they are as good as has been mentioned as one of the best teams in the history of the division. Because every time I see them,
to be fair, we did a mid-season predictions pod a few weeks ago,
And I had them falling off, and I had Southampton winning the league, which might be a little bit ambitious. But the key point in that is I don't necessarily buy into it as much, and it is partially based on the two games against Town, where I thought they were fine and they probably could have won both of those games, but I was never really convinced. And that has been the case in a lot of them. And they've got these tough tests. We had a look at the two they lost coming into this and thinking, oh, they're tough games. They've beaten by Middlesbrough, good team on the counter, beaten by Leeds, probably in terms of performances and the way that they carve teams apart, maybe the best team in the league at the moment. But QPR, for example, are playing, I'd say, mid-table football at the moment, trying to get out of the relegation zone. And they're exactly that kind of banana skin, I think, that they would have caused a lot of top teams problems, and Leicester were the ones who fell into it. And it's not like, I'm going to mention XG here, but they were beaten on XG as well, which shows it's not just a smash and grab that QPR went and took the 3 points. So at the end of the day, I'm not totally convinced, and it opens things up and makes things really entertaining, because there was every single chance that Leicester could have gone and beaten Leeds, and you're looking at a totally different position and situation then, aren't you? Where you're looking at Leicester having wrapped it up and maybe Leeds getting dragged back into it, but with their form, how does that play out? Now it's just a totally open race, and that's not just in terms of automatic promotion, but for the title as well. Any of them are in it, and Town are very much in it. We kind of mentioned before that there's this idea that pundits and the external view is a lot of this, the recently relegated sides. It's absolutely not. Ipswich Town are fully in the race. They've absolutely got a chance of winning the championship title. And based on the results as well, this was their weekend, I'd say. And we don't know whether it is going to be their season. We don't know whether it's going to end with a trophy and promotion and banners and all those kind of things. But in terms of this weekend, they're the ones who won it, I'd say, because everything just really kind of fell their way as well as it could.
Mm. Norwich City are in seventh place, still with a good shout of getting in the playoffs. And Ipswich are 20 points clear of them. 75 points on the board, which is normally enough to get you. I think that's the average for a playoff place. And there's still, 11 games to play. Ross, all the pressure is on Leeds, Leicester and Southampton, isn't it? They'll be feeling the heat. I note that Enzo Maresca is talking about maybe the pressure starting to get to his players. That, you know, they're the ones that are going to be expected to get this job done, not Ipswich.
Yeah, with their players they've got, the money they've got, they were relegated from the Premier League last year. We came up just going, let's just enjoy being back in the Championship after so long away. And obviously it was a fresh sort of challenge, because with the new ownership and, you know, some of the players who actually, you know, are passionate about this team, and the fans, you know, packed out Portman Road every week, packed away ends. The pressure is on those three teams, and we'll just go into every game. The old cliche, take every game as they come and all that stuff. So bring it on. One thing, though, I'm a bit worried about, though. I'm looking at the goal difference, and I hope that doesn't come into play, but our goal difference isn't too great. We've got one better than Southampton, but we're currently 12 away from Leeds, and we are, let me just get my maths in, 15 away from Leicester. So I hope that doesn't come into play, but that's one thing you have to look at as well. I don't know if you guys are...
It's effectively worth an extra point, isn't it? I think they'll do well to overturn that goal difference on Leeds. I think that would take something quite remarkable, to be honest.
I think Leicester's an interesting, because we're talking about pressure. There is a lot of pressure on them to go up in terms of a financial perspective, because all is not too well at the King Power, I don't think. And they've hedged a lot of their bets. They made some big sales, but they also they recruited heavily last summer, and it's done with the idea that they have to go up. And if they don't, they're going to have a huge clear out over the summer, because trying to balance the books over what they've had in the Premier League not forgetting that this is a side that was competing in Europe, to have that drop down, the revenue changes, and, you know, whether they have that or not doesn't really matter, because you have to be able to balance it in terms of what you're bringing in the Championship. And that's going to change massively when the year changes, and they're going to have to record fairly big financial numbers for a season when they're going to be in the second tier if they don't go up. And you look at their running as well, it gets complicated, I'd say, as well, by the fact that they're still in the FA Cup. They're going to have to go to Stamford Bridge. The game that got moved for that is Southampton at home, which feels massive. They've still got to go to Hull fairly soon. They've still got to play Norwich, who are in really, really good form. They've still got to host West Brom. They've still got to go to Preston, who are in excellent form. Those are really, really tough games. And I'd have a little look at the run-ins. Southampton probably have the hardest because they've still got to play Town, Leeds and Leicester. But given the current run of the Foxes, you wouldn't say that it's necessarily going to be easy for them either. And you'd say they need to start picking up some points pretty soon, because the matches will get much harder as their running progresses.
Mm. All I could think of where you kept saying they've still got to go to is the Kevin Keegan rant. And I would love it.
And I'd love it.
They still got to go there and get something. Yeah, that rearranged game against Southampton's very interesting, isn't it? That's now going to get probably looking at, there's not that many gaps in the fixture list. That's probably going to come 3-4 from the end, potentially. So, yeah, interesting times. We've mentioned some hot takes that have aged pretty well. Our overall record is hit and miss, I would say, as a team over our predictions. But some of the ones we did more recently, Ross picked out Nathan Broadhead as his surprise pick for top goal scorer for the remainder of the season. And he then went and scored 3-3. So that was a decent shout, I think. Alex, as we've mentioned, talked about Leicester fading away. That was a big shout at the time, but has aged pretty well. And if you remember, I talked about Ipswich going on a 10-game unbeaten run, starting with that West Brom game. We're now 6 into that. Ross did ask me at the time, do you think they're going to win them all? And I said, no, let's not get carried away. They're not going to win them all. But I tell you what, they've won 5 of the 6 so far. So the momentum is with Ipswich, and there's remarkable similarities with last season, isn't there? The wind's drying up over the Christmas period, 4 January signings all coming in and making a difference, form being hit at just the right time. Is history going to repeat in the Championship? Very big ask to keep that going for these final 11 games. But I tell you what, the fixtures still look on paper, and I know that's always, in the Championship, nothing is won on paper at all. But on paper, these are still some winnable games coming up for Ipswich Town, starting with the next one tomorrow night at Portman Road, where you'll always back Ipswich against anyone. And Bristol City are the visitors. Liam Manning's Bristol City. What are your overall thoughts on this one to start with, Alex?
When you were talking about that, the only thing that was in my head was with 11 games to go, Ipswich Town have promotion to the Premier League in their hands, which was a weird, weird thought that we're in this position in March now where they can say that. Wow. I think a few weeks ago, this was looking like quite a difficult game. And with someone who has a West Ham supporting girlfriend, I'd seen, I was at the London Stadium for the first game where it finished 1-1. And I thought that Bristol City, any other day, would have won that one comfortably. And then they did do that in the replay. And I was thinking, wow, this is a team that's going to start finding some momentum under Liam Manning. And they had a couple of okay results after that. They had it was a few draws. They drew away at Coventry, who were doing quite well at the time. Draw at home to Watford. They were taken out on penalties by Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup, beaten by Leeds, then put together a couple of wins where they went to Middlesbrough and won, and then obviously ended Southampton's very, very long, can't actually remember exactly how long, but it was a very lengthy
25 games, all competitions. Whoa, I think it was, yeah.
And now it's just kind of fallen apart a little bit again. You've had they've been beaten by QPR, as I've said, I think are comfortably a mid-table team at this point. Gone to Sheffield Wednesday and lost. I'd probably put them in a similar boat to QPR. And the one that will hurt the most is they've been beaten in the 7-side derby by Cardiff over the weekend at home, which was a game, whenever I was on Twitter, it was, do whatever you want between now and the end of the season, but don't lose this game. And they went and they lost it in front of their own supporters. And the pressure's starting to build, I think, which feels a little bit strange for a team that aren't a million miles necessarily away from the playoffs, probably will end up missing out in the end. There's this big gap to make up. But a young and exciting manager is starting to feel the heat a little bit, I'd say. And I think that there are some supporters who aren't totally convinced. And the last thing that you're going to want is having lost three games on the bounce, having lost one of your bigger games of the season, and then having to go to Portman Road just what a few days later. That's really, really difficult. So one that you can't write off as an easy game. In Kieran McKenna fashion, you can't write off any championship game as an easy game. They are excellent on the counter, and they will probably suit not having too much possession. So Town are going to need to make the most of their chances. Absolutely. It's a lot of really exciting young players, but there is a lot of pressure on Bristol City at the moment. These are not kind of, it's not one of those games towards the end of the season where it's a team that's fading away and the season's done. It's going to be a rebuild in the summer, and they can maybe play with the shackles off and a bit of risk. I think that fans could start to turn if something goes bad. And that means that, it'll be interesting to see what the tactical setup is from Liam Manning going into the game.
And going back to our predictions pre-season, I think I had Bristol City down as my dark horses. I mean, just as a city as a whole, I think there's the largest place in England not to have had a top flight club. There's a lot gone on. You know, Mark Ashton has kind of started that with the stadium redevelopment there. And it feels like a club that could gain momentum and take off at some stage. And they spent a decent amount of money last summer looking at it. Rob Dickey, £1 million from QPR, centre half, the right back McCrory. I think he was £2 million. That was quoted from Aberdeen. Jason Knight from Derby, another £2 million transfer reportedly. So, and they got a decent bit of experience across that team. People like Andy King, obviously a Premier League winner with Leicester, and Naki Wells, who's had some big money moves as well. Yeah, I thought they might be sort of near that top six conversation, but those last few results, like you say, losing to QPR, Sheffield Wednesday and Cardiff in a row, I think will have hit them hard. Just looking at some of Liam Manning's comments after the QPR game, we never really got going. After the Sheffield Wednesday game, not good enough. I'm hugely annoyed. And then after the game against Cardiff at the weekend, there's a reason we're one of the lowest scorers in the league, 12 shots inside the box. And we didn't test the goalkeeper. I note their top goal scorer has got 6 goals in the league, Tommy Conway. Alex, you were at the game at Ashton Gate earlier in the season where a Nathan Broadhead goal was enough to secure a 1-0 win. I think Sam Bell was probably one of their better players that day. He's been ruled out for the season with a hamstring injury. Scott Twine, who was an eye-catching signing in January, he's struggling with his quad, just can't stay fit at the moment. So, is this a good time to face Bristol City? I guess on the flip side of it, Ipswich have, you know, are missing a couple of players themselves, and we haven't seen Amari Hutchinson go back-to-back too many times. We haven't seen Jeremy Sarmiento go back-to-back too many times. So, you know, this is a tester from an Ipswich perspective as well.
Yeah, it's one that will probably stretch the squad a little bit, and I think it's hard to look at an unchanged side necessarily. There might have to be a few different players coming in. I'd definitely look at someone like a Marcus Harness who can come in and have an impact for this one. And there will be others as well. You've got to factor in the travel. Obviously, Bristol City will have to come from Bristol to Ipswich. That will play a part, but they haven't had to make such a long trip to Plymouth as Town have to play in very difficult conditions in a tough game. I think the injuries will hurt both teams, but especially you look at, Bristol City. I think Tommy Conway's an exciting one, but Sam Bell missing is going to be a big blow. They were two of the players that have looked liveliest in the last few weeks. And in the reverse fixture, I actually feel like there was a bit of a running theme, because Bristol City, I was thinking they had a lot going forward, and I think they had the fans behind them. There was quite a lot of exciting open play. This was under Nigel Pearson as well. Pulling the trigger was a totally different matter, and trying to get it into the back of the net. And so you can kind of see where Liam Manning's comments come from. In that case, you look to your senior figures, and maybe they need to step up a little bit more and they haven't been doing that as well. Do you go and switch up and bring the youth in? I think Conway was benched over the weekend for Naki Wells. I know Naki Wells previously, go back quite a long way, actually quite a good record against Ipswich, I think. One of the first games I ever attended at Portman Road when I ended up going with my granddad in about 2013 or so. I think Town were 2-0 up and conceded to two Naki Wells goals when he was at Huddersfield Town. So he has that kind of record at Portman Road there as well. They have the experience, they have the youth, it has a nice balance to it. And as you said, going into the season, I had that feeling that they could do something, bringing in players like Rob Dickey in the past. I remember him being a top-end championship player. It just, that hasn't seemed to be sustainable. And that maybe has been the story of their time in the championship. A lot about them that hasn't really paid off. It's hard to put it down something as well. You can't really put it down to the managers because no one's managed to do it. The recruitment looks good. What's going wrong? I don't know. Is it the right time to play them? Probably after this little dip. But yeah, these kind of sides, I mean, beware the wounded animal. That's the only other thing to say, is that they can pose that risk. Is Liam Manning going to get them fired up? You know, you being written off going to Portman Road, is that going to give them a little kick potentially?
Well, Liam Manning's a top young coach, obviously formerly of this parish, former Ipswich youth player, former academy coach. I think he's, you know, he's cut from the same cloth as Kieran McKenna. If Kieran did, hopefully, touch wood, won't happen, leave at some point in the near future, I think Liam would be part of that conversation. I think he's their biggest asset at the moment, and maybe it's going to take him a little bit of time to put his own stamp on things after Nigel Pearson's own approach before. Counter-attack and set pieces are the two big weapons that they've got. We mentioned Rob Dickey. He's always a threat coming up at set pieces. I think if Ipswich win the set piece battle, if they outscore or level Bristol City from a set piece point of view, then I think they outscore them from open play is the way I see this game panning out. We mentioned the Ipswich team. Ross, do you want to make some predictions as to what you think might happen? Do you think Harness for Sarmiento is one? What about right back? Axel kept his place ahead of Harry Clark at the weekend. Sounds like he had another solid game. What do you reckon?
Yeah, actually give a shout out to Axel, the Rolls Royce of a right back, playing in his not natural position, but he's been fantastic since coming in. But has he done many free games in a row, has he? I don't know. So, and Harry Clark came on, obviously, you know, on his birthday. He was able to give a fist pump birthday to the away crowd. So maybe this is a good game for Harry Clark to come in just to test him, see how he does, just to, you know, take Axel out and get Axel ready for Cardiff away on the weekend. So that's probably that one. I think, yeah, Harness could be a good one to start this, just to dip out Sarmiento. And everyone else, is Massimo back from his illness? But then Travis has done really well. Like Travis, I think, I've just put in a fantastic performance at Plymouth. Why are you dropping me? But it's just, you know, once again, I don't think you get dropped for the sake of getting dropped. It's more just, you know, just manning everyone, just making sure everyone gets their minutes and also no one gets too tired and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's probably the only ones to really look at. My prediction, yeah, maybe Harry Clark to start. Maybe Travis will start again with this one. Maybe Massimo will come in maybe for the Cardiff game and then Harness for Sarmiento.
Prediction time. How are we feeling? Is this run going to continue? Are we going to get the 6th league win in a row? Go on, Alex, kick us off.
Yeah, 6 in a row I'm going to go for.
We want six.
Yeah. Not 6-0 or anything like that. I don't think I'm going to score 6. I'm going to go 3-1, I think. The big thing that stands out in my mind is, as so many teams can't handle Kiefer Moore, and it'll be an interesting battle between him and Rob Dickey, I think, who yeah. Very, very tall gentlemen. But you look at, for example, how Kiefer Moore dealt with Jake Cooper at Millwall. If he can win that battle in the same way, teams just can't handle him. Even if you handle his physicality, you've got to handle what he can do on the ball. I think he's going to be such a nuisance. So I'm gonna play it safe. I'll have him score first, and I'm going to have a 3-1 Town win.
Ross?
I want to have a clean sheet, but I don't know if we will get a clean sheet. As you mentioned, the counter-attacking set piece. Obviously, we will win the set piece battle. I'm going to go for a win as well. We are going to go for six wins in a row. I want to go for 2-1. 2-1 for Town. And that'll be nicely. Do you know what? I'm going to also do a little hot take. We're going to score a late winner. Because why not? I haven't seen many late winners. So actually, no, that's not good for the deadlines. Scrap that. Tuesday night game. No,
Mark
no late
is
winner.
Off. Mark is off. No late winner.
No late winner. Although it'll be fun. No late winner. 2-1 win. Job done. They'll score a consolation.
I'll take a late winner. Don't worry about all that.
Okay.
Who's your first goal scorer?
Stu's not doing the match report. That's why he's taking a late winner.
First goal scorer. I've been trying to do different goal scorers. Like I said, Leif Davis to score. I want him to score a goal. So I'm going to go Leif Davis again because I want him to score a goal. So come on, Leif. Score a goal.
Okay. Left field, literally, but I like it. I've also got 2-1 in my mind. So I'll stick with that. And I think Sam Morsi's going to score in this game. I think is he going to risk Massimo? It depends how bad this illness is. Just you know, you don't want to risk him coming in, being a bit under the weather. And like you say, Travis has been pretty solid. But I think that might be a Sam Morsi winner, a bit like Watford away. So I won't go with him for first goal scorer. I'll go with Connor Chaplin. I'm going to keep riding the Connor Chaplin train at the moment. Chaplin opener, Ipswich to win 2-1. And as a little bonus prediction, I think Sam Morsi winner. I can feel it in my bones. Wow. Well, if that is the case, what a remarkable season this will be, continue to be for Ipswich Town. Everyone I bump into, Ipswich Town fans are just, it's a bit of a smile, it's a bit of a shake of the head, it's a bit of a, just enjoy this ride as long as it can. And what the final destination is, we don't know. But I think everyone's itching to get back to Portman Road tonight. It's a tomorrow night. It should be a hell of an atmosphere. And we'll all be there to cover it as always. Don't think you'll hear me in the host chair much more, but hopefully that was okay. We've got a bit of housekeeping to do to finish, haven't we? Otherwise, Ross will tell me off. Should have mentioned them earlier, but our sponsors, Manscaped. Ross likes to tell us how they can help you out with all of your grooming, above the waist, below the waist, around the face, up the nose, in the ears, around the beard, all of the hair, everywhere. They'll sort it out for you. Use the code KOA at checkout to get yourself 20% off. Ross, is that correct? He's nodding. Yeah, good. Nailed that. No other sponsors to mention, I don't think, at the moment. If you want to sponsor us, give us a shout. We're always after some extra backing. I think that's about it, isn't it, Ross? Anything else we want to mention? Oh, I should mention one last thing, and that is, Ross, you were at the ladies' game yesterday, and as mentioned at the very top, a Devon double for Ipswich Town. Good win for Joe Sheehan's side.
Yes, a Devon double indeed. Sort of perfect way to end the weekend and a better journey home, knowing Town have won two games in Plymouth. Although they weren't playing in Plymouth, they were playing in Newton Abbott, the Devon FA. So a little bit further from where I was staying. Big shout out to Steve Wallers, who gave me a lift from my hotel to the Devon FA. Another person to add to the long list of people who I owe lifts to in the future when I do finally drive. But yeah. We're not going to mention it, are we?
No, it's fine. No.
I found another theory. Move on. A lot of people actually asked me in Plymouth. There's actually a couple actually came over to me and they said, Debbie and Gerald, shout out to them as well. They said, did you foul another theory? I went, yeah, I did. But yeah, women's team, big win. 3-1, dominant performance. Natasha Thomas scored, Sophie Pessett scored, and Leonard Gunning-Williams scored. A very good win. Keeps their slim chances of promotion still alive, but also looking forward to the game at Portman Road, which is not long to go now. Of course, during the international break, the 23rd of this month. So if you got a loose end and fancy going and watch your first ever women's game, go down there. Tickets are now on sale for general sale, so get yourself down there. But yeah, Stu, good win for the Tractor Girls, and hopefully that continues.
League leaders Portsmouth next, is that right? I saw in your piece yesterday. So hopefully they can keep this winning run going into that game at Portman Road over the international break. And there's a little bit of skin in it. There's something still riding on that game, and they can get themselves a big crowd at Portman Road. But we'll talk a bit more about that when it's nearer the time. For now, thanks for listening. And we'll see you at Portman Road tomorrow night, Ipswich Town versus Bristol City. See you then.